Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 12:31 p.m. That is Central Time. Today is May 24th. I'm recording a little early because I'll be heading off to the airport this afternoon. And I thought we'd kick off with 10-year Treasury yields. They're down 11 basis points. So this has very clearly broken the sequence of higher reaction lows. It's back in the region of the lower side of the range that was formed in April. So, if there were a midpoint danger line stop, it has now been triggered. So, this is at least a deeper consolidation in the region of the 3% level. Now, it may be more than that. And I think the size of the moves and the dynamism with which the market is moving, in addition to the demand for the yen that we're also seeing, suggests that we're in a risk-off environment. We haven't really had a risk-off environment for quite a while. There, at least, there hasn't been, and that's, and I know that's going to sound ridiculous because the stock market has been down really quite aggressively, but the stock market has been falling in line with bonds. This has been more of a flight to cash. And now, what we're starting to see is more of investments in bonds starting to come back in. People looking at 3% and thinking, well, if I'm not going to buy it now, when am I going to buy it? Because every time the yield has got up to 3% in the last decade, it's been a roaring buy. So then you're starting to get value players starting to come back into the bond market. And of course, that is breaking the correlation between yields and stocks. There's been a lockstep move between weakness in the bond market and weakness in the stock market. So the yields are starting to come back down in treasuries, and it's at least a deeper consolidation. I think we have to at least conclude that this could be a medium-term top for the yield. And until we have evidence to the contrary, then we have to assume that yields are going to compress from here. But bond prices are just one market. Stock markets are still weak. Now the S&P 500 is off its lows, and it was really knocked back in here today because of Snap. So they're citing macro factors. And the share is down in excess of 70%. So this is a big move. And there's no real sign yet that it's over either. But Google also pulled back rather sharply. And that's not just because of contagion, but it's also because of antitrust threats. And there's an increasingly loud call to split the company up. And of course, then I think there's something that is less well remarked upon, and that is that rather than pioneering new business models, what we're seeing a lot of these days is copycats. Everybody wants to be an advertiser these days. So that's certainly was pioneered by Google. And then Amazon has taken up that mantle and is now actively encouraging sellers to advertise. But of course, that's also contributing to inflationary pressures. And Amazon is far and away, far is a long way from being the cheapest marketplace to shop on these days. So one really is paying up for convenience, and the share price continues to deteriorate. Now we're back in the region of the psychological 2000, and that's the upper side of the range from before the pandemic. So if the share is going to rally, it would really want to be getting about it. But the more important point here is that it has never traded below the 1,000-day moving average in at least the last decade. And it has really quite clear type 3 top formation characteristics. We have the longer range, the failed upside breaks, the massive reaction against the prevailing trend. Then this range that persisted got almost all the way back to the peak, around 3,500, failed in really emphatic fashion. This looks like a completed top formation, and until we have evidence to the contrary, well, we have to just stick with that conclusion. Apple has been the stalwart, and it's also breaking down. So it's clearly broken the sequence of higher reaction lows. It's below the 200-day moving average, and this looks like another one of those occasions when Apple will revert back to the 1,000-day moving average. As bond yields come back down and it fails to loop through to providing strength to stocks, well, the only conclusion is that there's a problem with growth. But of course, if there's a problem with growth, then that's going to inhibit central banks from raising interest rates, or at least doing so aggressively. So gold is starting to rebound, and it has certainly steadied from the $1,800 level. It's firming from the region of the 200-day moving average. It's held the sequence of higher reaction lows. So this is looking like a low of at least near-term significance, potentially medium-term significance. But we'll certainly need some additional upside to really confirm that and to really emphatically break that steep decline. One of the challenges here is that investors remain wedded to the imbued or the conditioned response to a pullback in a secular bull market, which is to buy the dips. And certainly, we're starting to see some support coming through for the yen. Now, that is despite the fact that Japan is still engaged in quantitative easing and doesn't really have any intention of walking away from it. The yen generally tends to be a safe haven in times of stress. So we are certainly looking at stress, and oil prices continue to remain firm. So if we're thinking about growth threats, well, the strength of oil is a big one. Now, it's right in the region of the upper side of the range. And if we have lower growth, lower yields, and people worried about recessions, then that will sap demand. So that's an important characteristic that could limit the size of an advance. But at the same time, we have a massive dislocation in the market. Urals crude is stuck at a discount of about $30. And customers are lining up to buy Russian crude. So this is creating a massive dislocation. The UAE is now starting to send oil to Europe. And this is like the first time in the last few years they've done that. And it's in direct response to Europe not wanting to buy Russian oil anymore. Then we have this big dislocation in natural gas. And Europe's clearly struggling to avoid importing from Russia. But of course, Russia isn't unscathed. So they've got a big balance of payments, a bonus because they're not spending it domestically. Nobody wants to export into Russia. I think what's happening in Taiwan is going to be pivotal to what happens in Russia. You had President Biden yesterday talking about intervening to support Taiwan. Now, of course, he didn't say what he would do to support Taiwan. But the bigger picture here is that Joe Biden has made several statements that are well outside the norms of strategic ambiguity. And China will view that as saber rattling. So, what would China do in order to respond to that? Well, they might offer assistance to North Korea, and we might see further missile tests. And there's certainly been a lot of those recently. But what they could additionally do, if they wanted to escalate, they could start providing chips or spare parts to Russia. And of course, that would reduce some of the pressure on Russia. But this is, of course, the big question. Obviously, the USA is attempting to support Europe and sending oil and gas exports, particularly LNG, and sending weapons to Ukraine, but China has got its own self-interests And they're certainly going to be perhaps not overt, but covert in their support for Russia. And that will escalate if this Taiwan question continues to make headlines. And then, of course, we have the additional point that there's the real potential that with all of this dislocation in supply chains, that ultimately companies will have ordered more than they need, and that will then translate into fewer orders in future. So the TAIEX in Taiwan has pulled back below the 200-day moving average, and it's a broadening pattern overall. We have failed upside breaks. Now we're getting the massive reaction against the prevailing trend. So it also looks like a completing top formation. And the semiconductors index in the USA is also looking like a deep process of mean reversion. It's still above the 1,000-day moving average and it hasn't broken below it yet, but this remains a taut environment. We should, I think, and I think the travails that the ARK Innovation ETF are experiencing is emblematic of what we see everywhere else. The times when it's done best were in 2017, and that was in the aftermath of the Trump tax cuts and the repatriation of profits. So the ETF went from 20 to about 45 to 50 in the space of about 18 months. So that was a big infusion of new liquidity, and it supported speculative investments. Then we had an enormous infusion of liquidity during the pandemic, so the ETF went from 40 to 160, up 400%. Well, now we're looking at quantitative tightening, higher interest rates, and less enthusiasm for big spending packages from governments. So the ARK Innovation ETF is pulling back down again, and it's reasonable to anticipate that it'll bumble around and not do much of anything when it eventually does bottom, until we see another round of outsized money creation. The challenge, of course, is that the numbers that are required are going to be in the trillions. So this is one of the interesting things about what's going on in China, that the CSI 300 was in negative territory today, and I think we can just clearly say that it's struggling to find a low. This is at least some more encouraging action that it's bottoming, that we've seen a couple of upward dynamics, but it's really got to do more. And the reality is that China is implementing supports, but not in an especially aggressive manner. The types of support mechanisms I've seen have been 20 billion here, 10 billion there. But for a country of its size and an economy of its size, and just the size of the market cap of the CSI 300 is 17.84 trillion yuan. So it's going to take a bigger amount of money spent to move the needle. And they're worried about their property market. They're trying to manage a property market deflation and less emphasis for the property market on the economy, and that's an exceptionally difficult thing to do without a crash. So I think we can still conclude that they're doing just enough to avoid a crash, but they don't want to inflate asset prices in a big way either. So we're still in a rather difficult environment, and obviously in Europe, well, valuations are lower, and the majority of stock markets are in the region of their respective 1,000-day moving averages. But the 200-day moving average has turned lower, and this isn't the first time it's happened, because this has not been a consistent trend. We've had lots of choppy action over the course of the last decade, and it hasn't changed. So what we really need to see is continued support around the 400 area, and then an improvement upon that. and most particularly to get back above the 200-day moving average. And then when we think about the FTSE 250, well, it got up to test that 1,000-day moving average, but has not been able to push back above it. Now, this is in large part because the pound has rebounded, and we've definitely seen that the dollar is starting to come under pressure. So the pound was in mildly negative territory today. It's still holding on to the 125 handle, but it's at least demonstrating short-term support at the lower side of its range. And the euro was in mildly positive territory today. What I find interesting is Europe is talking about raising rates. Some people think they should go 50 basis points, and Christine Lagarde doesn't really believe that that's necessary. But what we're potentially looking at is they may not be able to raise rates at all, or that they're just going to be able to do it once. The growth challenges that are coming through as a result of less liquidity, less money printing, smaller deficits, that's all feeding through into lower growth. And what central bank is going to raise rates into a lower growth environment and deliberately exacerbate inflationary or deflationary pressures and a recession if they don't have to. So I think that the one thing that we should be starting to think about is that Japan hasn't been able to raise rates for decades. Europe is creeping up on a decade without being able to raise rates. And I don't think a 25 basis point hike here or there is really going to matter. And is this going to then also be the fate of the USA? Are we going to see that the upper limit on the interest rates, about 2%, that the next time they cut, it will go even lower? And that the hiking cycle after that will peak even lower again. So there's the real possibility that the US economy is heading towards a Japanization. And if bond yields continue lower from here, well, eventually that will start to create demand for more technology and growthy kinds of opportunities. But what I thought was interesting today, I saw an interview with one of the CIOs from Goldman Sachs, and she was saying that there's been a big valuation discount imposed upon the public markets, but not on the private markets. So that is potentially coming, and some of these private equity ventures will have to start marking to market, or they're going to have less success at raising money. And that could have a material effect on interest rates because we're now in an environment where there's a lot of activity is happening outside the sphere of public markets. So problems there tend to be under the radar. I was at a housewarming party over the weekend, and some of the financial shenanigans that were being described over a couple of drinks would make even Bernie Madoff blush. So these friends of ours, they sold their business to a larger company, and then they've seen how the and I had never been aware of this, but it was like by giving employees limitless leave, that becomes a short-term liability on the balance sheet, which they can then use as a write-off. So it's a rather interesting way that you tell people we're going to pay you to stay at home. We're going to use that as a liability, and we're going to goose our books that way. And of course, a lot of people are already planning on leaving and using that infinite leave time to go find other jobs. But this is the reality of the private markets right now, and the tightening liquidity is having a knock-on effect. So I think we're not quite out of the woods yet, and we're not really going to be out of the woods until we see central banks relenting and starting to raise to increase the amount of money that they're being making available to the wider market. And I think with that, I'll leave it for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.